Hello, and welcome to New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft. I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane.
If you're looking for a podcast on traditional American folk magic, we hope you'll stay tuned.
In this episode, we'll have listener feedback and some news.
Then, in the second part, we'll be discussing some signs and omens. Thanks for listening. All right, well, thank you for joining us today. We thought we would start off today with a little bit of listener feedback. First of all, we'd just like to say thank you so much to all the wonderful people who've been writing to us.
And the iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes reviews. We've got, I think, 6 really glowing reviews, 5-star or thereabouts. It's been such a positive experience. So thank you, everybody who's left comments on iTunes and comments on our blog as well. Comments on the Podcast Alley page. We can't thank you enough. Thank you. And then we've had just great support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been really nice.
Mm-hmm. And big support from the Podkin community as well. Like Araya, Mediastra, Octera, and Juniper at Walking the Hedge. Wiggly and Way has been very supportive. Sarah at Hedge Folk Tales. Just really, really good support in the community. So thank you all for that.
Yeah, that's been very surprising to me. Because, you know, I had never really done much in the podcasting community. So mm-hmm. Very pleasant surprise.
I know.
So thank you very much.
It's one of those few situations where you start an endeavor and it's better than you expected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been very, very good.
So, on top of really great comments, we've also got a few questions that we want to get into. I guess let's get right down to that.
All right.
So, let's see. One person writes, I wonder if your podcast refers only to North America and Central. Since the title of your blog refers to Americas as a continent, I would like you to talk about traditional witchcraft in South America.
And I think we kind of got into this a little bit in show one. But it bears repeating at this point, that we probably will not get into, much of the South American, or even Central American or West Indian.
Right. And that's not because we don't want to, it's because we don't know anything about it.
Exactly.
Like we started the blog and podcast having what I feel like is a pretty good general knowledge of voodoo, and Appalachian, and Corey's knows more about it than I do, but about
powwow.
Yeah, powwow. That's Vedu Nutch, and then, you know, a few other systems.
Yeah, Curanderismo, Brujeria.
Like we said, you know, like I said, it's not that we don't want to, it's just that we don't know enough to talk about it, and we intend to learn more. It's just we sort of want to complete our training, almost.
Right. You know, it took 250, 300 years to get from the East Coast to the West on this continent.
Right.
For the first European settlers. So, it's going to be a little while before we get down to South America with this podcast.
Right.
That's not to say we won't ever do it. It's just to say that it's not on our immediate radar. Mm-hmm. We're always open to learning more about it. But like Lane said, we're trying really hard to learn as much as we can and present as best we can the systems found on North American soil and get those out of the way first.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that should cover that angle of it.
Yeah.
Next question was from Chet. He says that he has recently started to study or research Dutch witchcraft. Says he's part Dutch also. And since that's also in his blood and he's not far from the Pennsylvania Dutch settlements, maybe we can touch on some of it if we have some info and are inclined to touch on it. Just a thought. And I think what he's getting at there is the Pennsylvania Dutch, which actually does not necessarily have to do with Dutch, as in people from Holland. It's related to the German.
Right, from the corruption of the word Deutsch.
Exactly. But as far as that Pennsylvania Dutch magic goes, powwow or bracherai or hekserai, and we actually did a little series on the blog a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, like a three-parter.
Yeah, a three-part blog entry all on introduction to powwow. So if you're interested in that, I highly recommend you go to newworldwitchery.wordpress.com and find the introduction to powwow blog series, because I feel like I did a darn tootin' good job of getting some basic information out there. And of course, I'm happy to you know, have other people who are more experienced in those systems give us more information or maybe you know, correct anything if anything is wrong.
Right, and we definitely tend to talk more about it. So
yeah, that will definitely be a big topic. We've actually got at least two guests coming that will have a good bit to say on that.
Right. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
So, okay, next question. And this is from, can you pronounce this for me?
Kveldrida.
Okay.
Who runs the Pagan Spirituality Today blog and podcast. Another one that I would recommend you checking out.
Okay. And he said, did you and Lane create the idea of New World Witchery, the tradition, or did you learn it from someone? So this, we think, is an important question because it brings up something that we want to be very, very clear about and kind of clear up any confusion.
And I've emailed Kveldrida about this. We've had a good discussion about it. So this is less for him specifically than for just the audience at large. We want to make sure that you guys understand that we are not trying to put together some sort of master tradition that, you know, you learn it from us and you're suddenly able to do all these different kinds of magic and, you know, you're lineaged and you have an initiation into New World Witchery or
right,
whatever.
Yeah, this is not a tradition that we're creating and it's no. that combines all these either. Like, we're not trying to do that like certain other traditions might.
Right. We you know, we certainly don't mind, you know, using things from different aspects of different traditions, but we're not trying to create sort of singular mishmash of all of them. We want them to stay separate. We want them to stay their own individual traditions.
Mm-hmm.
Where they overlap, we think it's really interesting, and we'll point that out.
Right.
But they are all their own traditions, and we highly recommend that you get into all of them, because they're all so fascinating and so interesting.
Mm-hmm. And they each have their own validity to
yeah.
witchcraft.
Yeah, exactly. They are their own kind of magic and witchcraft, and you know, it's really worth exploring them as individual traditions, rather than trying to, you know, look at New World Witchery and go, oh, you know, I can just study that one blog and I'm done.
Right.
Or I can study that one podcast and I'm done. I don't need anything else. We like to think of ourselves as sort of a springboard.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that we're saying you should do it this way. It's more of a scholarly teacher type of, at least we hope so.
Yeah.
You could do it this way. There are some, like, sort of, like, we're giving you your options if you want to work with something that is more on your soil.
In the magical restaurant of life, we are the waiter and sommelier of of fantastic American witchery.
There you go.
But there's a lot on the list that you can choose from.
Right.
A lot on the menu. And we'll just kind of help to point you in some interesting directions. But only you know what's really going to go down best.
Right, and what's best for you.
Yeah, so.
But thank you so much for the question, though.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully we've cleared that up. And so speaking of New World Witchery, the phenomenon that we are.
I wish.
really, we're just two crazy people talking into a microphone and hoping people are out there listening and not taking notes on what kind of mental treatment we need. Anyway, so we've got some interesting changes coming mm-hmm. down the pike.
I'm pretty excited about.
I'm excited about it too.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell them about?
Yeah, the first one that Corey and I have been talking about a lot is a new segment called Witchcraft, which it will be about some of the more crafty, hands-on, mundane things in your life that you may not know or may not have thought about having a magical slant to it.
Tell them what they are. Tell them what they are.
So, let's see. Some of the things I want to be talking about is knitting, embroidery, soap making, and maybe even working with a few things around your house, mundane things. Maybe, say, buttons. And, like, I'm, you know, pretty sure everyone has, like, a button jar laying around, or their grandmother mm-hmm. did. Maybe something magical you could do with that. And I'm hoping that through that segment, it'll kind of help open your eyes to a magical lifestyle way of being mm-hmm. instead of just maybe once every weekend, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm hoping it'll help me as well because I definitely need to work on that.
Yeah. And it creates this kind of like nice household witchery.
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about it. And we're also going to have something else. Corey, would you like to talk about that?
I would. So much. So in addition to that, we're trying to add in these more practical elements because while we do like discussing this at great length, we could talk about this stuff for hours and have,
and we fact, do,
and often lost those hour-long conversations to finicky garage band. In addition to Lane's excellent witchcraft segment, we'll be adding in a segment on the ingredient of the week. That may not be the final title for it, but that's kind of the gist of what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be looking at specific spell components, spell ingredients, things like roots and herbs, animal curios, can be charms,
mm-hmm.
All sorts of specific individual items that you can learn a little bit about from us and figure out how to add them into your practice.
Right.
And so we're kind of excited about those two segments.
Mm-hmm. And will that be in the instituted in the next podcast, or will that...
It'll either be the next... I have to be very careful about how I say this, because in the next podcast that comes out, he said slyly, there'll be a whole other little surprise. But then there will be an interview podcast, and I'm not sure if we'll be able to start it for that interview podcast, but you should at least start seeing this by sometime in April at the latest.
Right. Yeah.
So, within the next couple of podcasts, be looking for this.
Yeah.
So we're excited about that. We hope you're excited about that.
Yeah. And we're going to we're hoping it'll make it a little bit more structured and keep mm-hmm. our yammering down to a minimum.
Yeah, we do enjoy a good yammer.
So anyway, next we're going to be talking about omens and signs, so.
Mm-hmm. So, hope you can sit back and enjoy that, and I guess we'll see you on the other side of this break.
Yep.
Standing Stone
and Garden Gate,
a podcast for
artistic and creative,
intelligent and philosophizing,
crafty and practical,
deep thinking,
hardworking
pagans
and witches.
Visit stonegatepodshow.net
or us.
I'm Oriah the Sphinx from Media Astra Actera, a podcast for witches, magicians, and others of the occult persuasion. Join me for a thought-provoking blend of magic, witchcraft, and natural science as we explore worlds both inner and outer, above and below. You can find the show on iTunes or at sphinx.libsyn.com. And I hope you'll join me in standing Media Astra Actera.
Okay, so we're here to discuss omens and signs, and mm-hmm. Give you a little, I don't know where I'm going with that. Sorry, Glory.
That's all right. Yeah, we're going to be discussing signs and omens, different ways of, I don't know if you just call them reading the future or sort of reading events around you, but yeah, that kind of stuff, all that goodness. We're going to start with death omens. Ooh. And this first one is from a book called Signs, Cures, and Witchery by Gerald C. Milnes. And it says, I quote, "There seems to be a strong inclination to believe that the natural world in some way acknowledges the death of a person. Johnny Arvin, one of Milnes' interviewees, remembered an incident in which someone was practicing an Appalachian custom of sitting up with an old person who was near death. The man was relieved at 3 a.m. but was made to wait until a shower was over to start for home. After the shower, he started home, and all of a sudden the moon broke out and was shining pretty. He could not find any dampness on the ground from the rain. He later found that the person had died at the same time, and he thought it was a token." So what you think?
You know, I've heard that a lot, or I guess I've noticed that a lot, that what Milnes was saying, that there seems to be a strong inclination to believe that the natural world does acknowledge like a death or even a birth.
Right, like that. I've heard that with like stars. You know, like if there's a meteorite, it means somebody is dying
mm-hmm.
in the world. Or every time a person is born, a new star appears in the sky. Something like that.
Hmm.
Yeah. What about you? You have a death omen for us?
Yes, from the same book here. It is, quote, "Supernatural incidents are known in West Virginia as tokens, signs, or omens. Robert Simmons, an informant, told of the terrible times that were had in Thorn Creek community during the flu epidemic of 1918. Almost every family lost a member or members. Robert fondly remembered one old neighbor who would give him a loud hoot in the evenings when he was out doing chores. Presently, the daily greeting stopped, and they learned he had come down with the flu. One evening, after a week or so, they heard his loud hoot, salute them again, and were happy to know he was getting back to normal. However, Robert said, his eyes welling up with tears, if it was just a token, they soon learned he had died about the time they heard his last call.
Ooh. Sounds very Scooby-Doo. I think I've heard something similar to that, though. Usually, that hoot of an owl is supposed to signify death, right?
Yeah, I think I've heard that, too. Mm-hmm. I guess since they're nocturnal animals, they have that reputation for them.
Yeah, that sort of underworld connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? Do you know any other death omens? Death signs? I know we've talked before about, in more modern times, things like getting phone calls from the dead.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily an omen, but more like just a sign that it is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, from what I've heard, it's usually as the person is dying or maybe even a few minutes after.
And then I've heard one that was, it's sort of more of an urban legend where the person gets the phone call and it's just the deceased person on the other line or on the phone saying, I'll be there in 10 minutes. 10 minutes later, there's a knock at the door and they go to the door and nobody's there.
Yeah, that was creepy.
Yeah, that's always fun. And you told me one. What was it?
Yeah, this is a total urban legend, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I've heard it in various forms, but that someone gets a call and it's a dead loved one who's been dead for quite a while, and turns out that there is a storm and the power lines are down. So first of all, they couldn't have gotten a call from anybody, but they go to they check the power lines or see where they lead to, and it turns out to be the cemetery where that person is buried. So
no, that yeah, that's. That's beautifully creepy. I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy.
So, yeah, I think, death omens are pretty common. Find them a lot in Appalachian folklore, in a lot of American folklore in general. There's a lot about, the signs that death is coming, things like that.
Why do you think that is? Why are there so many?
I don't know. I mean, I guess because it's that great mystery. It's the, what is it that Captain Hook says? It's the... Or not Captain Hook, I guess Peter Pan says to die would be an awfully big adventure.
Mm-hmm.
It's the place that everyone goes but nobody comes back to tell about, except right. Maybe in rare occasions kind of a thing.
Right.
So yeah, it's fascinating for us. We want to know about it. We want to, know when it's coming. Yeah. Who doesn't want to know? Well, I guess a lot of people don't want to know exactly when they're going to die, but...
No, I don't think I would want to.
No, I probably wouldn't really want to know when I was going to die, but, if I was going to die and there could be a sign or an omen, from everyone around me, I think that'd be kind of neat. Just sort of to acknowledge that this is a big event. So speaking of big events, another big event in life that has a lot of folklore around it is birth.
Yes, definitely. So we have some signs and omens from Buying the Wind by Richard Dawson.
Yes. And these are going to be mostly from memory, unfortunately, because I returned the library book before recording the episode. Oh, that was a bad idea. But I remember some of them. One of them was about if the mother eats or is scared by something, then it can leave a birthmark on the child.
Mm-hmm. In that shape.
Yeah, in the shape of whatever it is. So if she's scared by a bear, the child will have a bear-shaped birthmark. Or if she's really craving an ice cream cone, she'll have a little ice cream cone shaped birthmark on the child. that's basically the thing. Do you think there's any validity to that?
No, not really. I don't have any birthmarks, but one of my brothers does, and yeah, it's just the shape of a blob. So maybe my mom watched the blob when she was pregnant.
Apparently a lot of people watch the blob while they're pregnant. It's like the pregnancy movie, I guess.
Oh, so. Goodness. Let's see. What were some other ones from that book? Well, one is about infants and children, but it sort of goes back to death.
Oh, no.
It was, you're not supposed to show a child their reflection in a mirror for the first year.
Ah, yes. Or they will die.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, when my child was born, it's funny, I instinctively would not let him near a mirror until I'd taken him around to every room of the house and done this sort of ritual where I, said, this is your home, this is where you come back to, this is where you belong.
Mm-hmm.
And until I knew he was comfortable and grounded in our house, I didn't want him to see the mirrors of the house.
Well, I think that it kind of goes back to, you know, that mirrors are sort of like a gateway or some sort of like a type of door, maybe to, you know, the fairyland, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, and definitely.
You know, fears of changelings and the fairies taking the baby.
Absolutely, yeah. That's almost kind of the fear that I had, was thinking, you know, I don't want something on the other side to see Jack and have access to him before you know, he's here and grounded and going to be okay in this world.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, like, I had, reading the book was not the first time that I had heard that. Actually, I had been told that by a family member, probably about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
on my side, who they live up, you know, closer to the Appalachians.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly common belief, you know.
And it was also told to me by, when I worked with children, by a woman, a mother who was from Mexico originally.
Oh.
So it's also held there.
Oh, yeah, and you said that there was something else with mirrors that she told you.
Yeah, she said to always, well, for, you know, many people here in, you know, the United States, excuse me, often talk about covering a mirror when if someone dies in your house, like, you cover all the mirrors to take them out.
Yep.
But this one was also cover all the mirrors when there's just like a lightning storm. So I don't know what the significance was. She didn't tell me, but she just said that was the superstition. She didn't really know what was behind it. She just always sort of followed blindly, kind of.
Right. No, I, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I would think, you know, lightning storms, thunderstorms would be a time when, I don't know if this is the right terminology for it, but like the veil would be thin because there's such a high level of power being generated.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. The powerfulness of the, you know, the lightning and
yeah, and you wouldn't want anything, you know, that was connected to that to be trying to get into your home.
Right.
So I can totally see that. It's interesting. So were there any other? I know one of the birthing customs is that you should always put something sharp under the bed to cut the birth pains.
Oh yeah, and also I remember one, I don't know if this is necessarily from this book, but I've heard this several times before, is that especially when ladies were still giving birth at home, mm-hmm. is that every knot in the room should be untied.
Yes, including like their hair. They couldn't have their hair bound up.
Right. So, and even like, you know, cords for draperies, you know, they all had to be undone. Shoelaces, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Knots should be untied. So I think that's a pretty cool one.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that. And I remember kind of being conscious of that even when my wife was giving birth. And so, like, I, you know, this may make me sound really awful, but, like, I was looking to make sure that she had her hair down in the delivery room. But then I got distracted by other things like, oh, you know, birth. So.
Right.
But yeah, so that's definitely interesting. Well, okay. What about some more domestic-type signs and omens?
Yeah, we have some from Ozark Superstitions by Vance Randolph, which isn't it now titled Ozark Mountain Magic?
Or Ozark Magic and Folklore or something like that.
Yeah,
it's been retitled since its original release, but it's an excellent book. So, okay, so what do we have from that?
Let's see. The arrival of a visitor, for example, is an important event in a backwoods cabin, and there are numerous signs and portents of his coming. When a woman drops a dish rag, she knows at once that some dirty individual is coming towards the cabin. If the cloth falls in a compact wad, the visitor will be a woman. If it spreads out upon the floor, a man is to be expected. It is bad luck to drop a dish rag anyhow, and many women take the cuss off by throwing a pinch of salt over the left shoulder immediately. To drop the towel used in drying dishes means that a stranger will arrive very soon, and if the towel is dropped twice, it means that the newcomer will be hungry and a meal must be prepared. The accidental dropping of cutlery also signifies a guest. A fork means a man, a case knife, a woman. If you help yourself to something at the table, and you already have some of the same stuff on your plate, it means that somebody's coming who is hungry for that particular article of food.
Neat stuff. I've heard some of that sort of in similar forms, but usually in variations like the salt. I know you throw the salt over your left shoulder if you spill it.
Mm-hmm. And that's supposedly because the devil appears behind you. But.
Right, and you want to blind him so that he can't do you any harm.
What would the devil appear to you if he spilled salt, though? I mean, does he care that much?
I don't know. Maybe because you're being wasteful and therefore engaging in vanity and vice.
Hmm. Wait.
Or maybe he just likes salty food. Maybe he likes salty souls. So, yeah, I've heard that. The dropping of cutlery. I've heard something along those lines, but it wasn't specific to, like, the type of cutlery you drop. It was more of, like, if you drop something, whichever direction it's pointing in is the direction your company's coming from.
Hmm. I've only heard, actually, a death omen when it concerning cutlery.
You're so morbid, lame.
I know. If you drop a steak knife or just more of a sharp edge, and it lands point down, sort of stuck in the floor, then that's a death omen, and you should kind of be on the lookout for that.
Mm, indeed. Well, okay, I've got a couple more of these household-type omens.
Okay.
Let's see. If the coffee pot rattles back and forth on the stove or a rocking chair moves along the floor as a woman rocks in it, she expects company before night and makes her household preparations accordingly. If she accidentally drops a bit of food on the floor, she knows that the visitor will be hungry. Children sometimes try to fetch company by running in one door and out another, or jumping out the window if the cabin has only one door, which is frequently the case. If coffee grounds cling to the sides of the cup high up, it is a sign that company is coming with good news. So, I don't know, the only thing in that little section that rings true for me is with the coffee grounds. I remember I've had my coffee grounds read before, or tea leaves read before, and I remember that being something kind of similar.
Oh, okay. I'm wondering why the children would try to fetch company. Like, why would they want to bring company over?
I don't know, they're kids, they probably get bored and yeah. Maybe they think that the company will bring candy.
Maybe.
So, I don't know.
There's a little bit more. And the listener should keep in mind, this is all, like, from the Ozarks. It's not necessarily nationwide.
Right. This is, you know, it's limited in scope. Not to say that there isn't some validity of this in other regions, but that this was specifically written about the Ozark Mountains and those customs. So if your region is different, you may have variations on these customs or completely different ones.
Right. So keeping that in mind, there's a little bit more. When two roosters fight in the yard, it is said that two young men will soon arrive. If two hens fight, female visitors are expected. If a dog rolls on the ground before the door, the children watch him closely, knowing that when he gets up, his nose will point in the direction from which a stranger is approaching. If the housewife's nose itches, it means that some unexpected company is on the way. An itching on the right side of the nose indicates a man. An itching on the left means a woman. Some hill folks say that such a visitor will be poor or needy, according to the old rhyme. If your nose itches, somebody coming with a hole in his britches. So, and if the woman's right hand itches, it means she will soon shake hands with an unexpected guest. When the joint of either thumb itches, she expects an unwelcome visitor within an hour or two.
Hmm.
Lots of itching.
Yeah, lots of itching. Lots of itching. I've heard about the... Well, it's not even so much I've heard. I really have a pretty strong belief that animals can detect a lot of these things before we can. Like, they know when company's coming. They know when things are about to change or get weird. You know, natural phenomenon or it's like they're cued into them.
Yeah, definitely. It's like that video we had stumbled on of the dog.
Oh yeah.
The earthquake.
Yeah,
the dog,
yeah.
Where it happened, it was all recorded, and it's pretty amazing because the dog just takes off running.
Yeah, like a full 5 seconds before anything moves, the dog knows that there's something happening. So yeah, I think animals are very sensitive. So that, you know, these, you know, with roosters fighting in the yard or a dog rolling on the ground, I think there might be some validity to that. But what about with the itching?
I've never heard anything that specific before here, you know, in our side of the country. But I have heard if your hand itches, it just means money. It doesn't necessarily mean the guest will be coming. It's money coming
right
to you or leaving, depending on the hand.
Right, yeah, yeah, I've always heard that, you know, if you're left-handed, it's just money's coming, if you're right-handed, it's just money's going. I say I've always heard that, but I think it really got the respective hands from Wicca.
Yeah, I think I'm the same.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I do always know, I know I've always heard that, you know, if your hands itch, money's changing palms soon. So I know I've always heard an association with hands and money, but as far as which hand means what, I think that comes more from Wicca.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. I've got a little bit more here on my end. This has more to do with itching, because we can't get enough of those crazy itches. We're witches with itches. That's what we are. Okay. If a pretty girl who lives appropriately enough in a town called Blue Eye, Missouri, told me that if your right eye itches, you'll be lucky, but if your left eye itches, it means a disappointment. Most Ozarkers don't see it this way. However, they believe that an itching of the right eye signifies bad luck, but when the left eye itches, it means that good news is a-coming. Never in all my life, an old lady told me, did my right eye itch real bad without I got into some kind of trouble before the day was out. Some people think that if your right ear burns, a man is talking about you, and if your left ear burns, a woman is taking your name in vain. Others say that an itching of the right ear means that someone is speaking well of you, but a tickling of the left ear means that someone is talking unfavorably about you. If your left hand suddenly begins to itch, the old folks say, you will shortly receive an unexpected present. When a woman sneezes before breakfast, it means that company will arrive before noon. If she sneezes during breakfast, it's a sign that two or more people will leave the house before sundown. If she sneezes with food in her mouth, it means that she will hear of a death before 24 hours have passed. If she sneezes while telling a story, it is a true story, even though she may believe that it is a lie. So the sneezing is interesting to me. I know I've heard folklore about sneezing before, but I don't think any of it resembled this.
Mm-mm. Me neither.
So that's new. I generally think if somebody sneezes with food in their mouth, it has less to do with death and more to do with duck and cover.
So. I'm inclined to agree.
Yeah. It's a little nasty. Right, here's a little bit more about sneezing, because you can't get enough of that crazy sneezing. Some people say that the girl who sneezes on Monday is sure to kiss a stranger before the week is out. Mrs. Coral Almy Wilson of Zinc, Arkansas, quotes the following sneeze rhyme. Sneeze on a Monday, sneeze for danger. Sneeze on a Tuesday, kiss a stranger. Sneeze on a Wednesday, sneeze for a letter. Sneeze on a Thursday, sneeze for better. Sneeze on a Friday, sneeze for sorrow. Sneeze on a Saturday, a friend you seek. Sneeze on a Sunday, the devil will be with you all week.
Hmm. Well, here's a different version from Reynolds County, Missouri. Sneeze on Monday, sneeze for fun. Sneeze on Tuesday, see someone. Sneeze on Wednesday, get a letter. Sneeze on Thursday, something better. Sneeze on Friday, sneeze for sorrow. Sneeze on Saturday, see your beau tomorrow. Sneeze on Sunday, the devil will control you all week.
Right, so no sneezing on Sunday. Generally, don't sneeze on Friday as well, it looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like if you're really going to go a little crazy for sneezing, Tuesday's a good day for it. Wednesday's not too bad.
I wonder why like certain days are better than others.
I don't know. It reminds me of that... the British thing about Monday's child is fair of face, mm-hmm. Tuesday's child full of grace. Reminds me a lot of that. There's always been, I think, an inclination to assign, I don't know if it's a magical value, but assign some sort of value to each day of the week and have it mean something.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I go into that, but some people love it, some people don't.
So, yeah.
Crazy
anyway.
Mixed up world we live in. All right. So that takes us through a lot of the folklore examples. Now, how much stock do you put into a lot of these omens?
That's a good question. It kind of varies for me. I don't know. I think it's important to sort of acknowledge it and kind of take it as like a little warning, but mm-hmm. you know, not put so much stock into it that you know you don't go out of the house if you drop a knife.
So you treat it like you said, like more as a warning than as
this is going to come true.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not something that has to guide your every movement. It's just something that sort of informs your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Other specific kinds of omens or signs that you put more faith in than others? Like, for example, I know a lot of people, they don't really believe in astrology, and I'm one of those people who's not a big astrology person, or I haven't been. I've gotten a lot more into it lately, partially because of you, because you're into it,
she's
green and big, and partially because of Araya at Mediastra Octera, because she's been doing a really good job of helping that make sense to me.
Right.
But I mean, I still find it hard. Like, I definitely don't buy into the whole newspaper horoscope thing.
No, I don't either. But I do put a lot of stock in the various qualities that a certain sign has. Mm-hmm. Like, Scorpios are this, Cancers are that. You know, like, you're very typical Virgo, so.
Yeah, you're a Virgo, aren't you?
Yes. Like
Virgo Sun, Virgo Moon.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Virgos get on best with other Virgos because they're so nitpicky, and my husband is also a Virgo, and I mean, that could be coincidence, you know, one could argue, but I've noticed a lot of personality wise people tend to live up to their signs,
and I would definitely say that there seems to be some validity to that. I don't think of it as like a star's influencing those particular people into that sign. Mm-hmm. Necessarily, I think it has a lot more to do with the natural cycles on this planet, and the star positions just happen to sort of help us demarcate the different things that are happening on this planet
that we don't necessarily notice.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So, like, you have you have your four seasons, but you probably have some sort of micro seasons divided into those seasons, and the star positions sort of help you pinpoint those.
Right.
And say, oh, well, you know, star positions at this point mean that the baby's going to be born in these sets of conditions. It's going to be a little warmer. It's going to be a little nicer. You know, you're going to have these influences, this kind of magnetic pull
going on. Right, that we don't even know about necessarily.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
There's a lot less to do with, you know, these distant celestial bodies exerting some sort of gravitational force on us than it is, you know, oh, the Earth is doing this, so that's why it affects these people this way.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I'm not an expert on astrology. I have no idea.
I don't profess to be one either, but I think I am a little bit more into it than you are.
Yeah, you're definitely more into it than I am.
I mean, I try to, like, if I'm doing a spell, you know, I'll definitely see what sign the moon is in, just to be sure. Like, because usually if it's something that totally doesn't fit, I'll move the night that I'm going to do it. If it's sort of either or, then I'm fine. But if it's really auspicious, then I sort of see it as a sign, and I'll be like, oh well, yeah, that's great. It's like a little extra boost. So it does affect how I work, but not to the extent that some people do it. Where, like, you have to plan it based on the sign, and you have to be really careful about what sign you cast in for certain spells. Like, I just.
Right, you don't take that ceremonialist route where you're going to use the exact planetary hour on the exact planetary day, and you're not going to do spell in any other conditions than that perfect set of conditions.
Right.
You just sort of look at it and go, oh, if I do it, you know, right now, I'm really kind of short-circuiting it, so I need to wait 3 hours.
Yeah.
Or I need to wait a day.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I think the moon phase is pretty important, so where it is in the sky, I think or not necessarily in the sky, but where it is in relation to the Earth helps as well.
What about as far as receiving these, you know, signs and then, you know, indications of what's going on in your life and the world around you? How do you feel about dreams?
I actually kind of put a lot of stock in dreams. Not all of my dreams, because I sort of, I can tell the difference between a dream and then something that's more than a dream. Because, you know, a lot of it, I think, is just your subconscious regurgitating whatever you happen to experience that day or that week. And it's putting together images in a new way. But I mean, there's a different type of dream, and they can be people visiting you, or they can be up from the future. My husband has plenty of dreams like that all the time. And they're nothing special. It's not like, you know, he saw a terrorist attack.
Yeah, or the winning a lottery number.
Right. He just, you know, he'll see us going to dinner or something and be like, hey, I dreamed this. And, it, you know, it's really mundane things. But
And you're sure it's not him just trying to, you know, angle you into going to dinner? You're like, I dreamed that we were going to that Mexican restaurant and really light. Isn't that weird? What are we doing for dinner tonight?
We do like our Mexican food.
Indeed.
But yeah, I've been visited by my dad before. After he died, and that was pretty intense. I mean, and I've had dreams with my dad in them, but I could tell they were just dreams. But then I've also had one where I really believe it was him.
Yeah, I've had, my mom has shown up in several dreams like that as well, is the thing. So I definitely think that there is value in what happens in dreams. As far as like signs and omens, I don't think I've had a whole lot that's very prophetic, other than like I have the weird flashes of deja vu, where I'll dream something that's incredibly mundane, like driving down the street and looking at my, you know, car's radio.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of a sudden I'll find myself one day driving down the street and looking at my car's radio. And it just makes me, it frustrates me because it's one of those things where I'm like, ah, that was, you know, I just fell right into that. And why can't I dream about those winning lottery numbers?
Right.
You know? But I definitely think that there's something more to dreams than just that random replay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think
some of the time.
Yeah, I think sometimes it is just your brain sort of filing things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that while your brain is filing things, a lot of other stuff can be happening.
Right.
Because, I mean, even when we're awake, we're only using, what, like 10 to 15% of our brain.
Yeah, something like that.
So I think there's definitely a potential for more to be going on, especially when we've sort of quieted the conscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As far as other signs and apparitions, omens. What about divination? Do you think that it's possible to read the future in a deck of cards? Or in a scrying bowl?
Well, I don't like scrying, mm-hmm. because it reminds me of a mirror, and we've gone over that.
Yes.
So, I don't usually do that, but the only thing I've ever had any success with is cards. I studied palmistry a teeny bit, but I think of that more as like, it's been done for so long that there's a developed set of rules for, like, this shape hand usually means this type of person, and that's how you read it.
Mm.
Like, that's seriously all it is. Like, if you have short, square fingers, it's this type of personality. Or if they're long, tapered fingers, it's this type of personality.
Mm.
And, you know, and then the lines mean certain things. And
mm-hmm.
So, but,
I can see that. I wondered then. I don't know. I wonder if it's one of those things where once you've had your palm read, if you just sort of start falling into that category as a self-fulfilling prophecy.
What do you mean?
Like if somebody, you know, I guess it would require that you were in a culture where palmistry was really, really active and common. But like, you know, you get enough people reading palms together that are all like, man, I hate those short, squatty-fingered people.
Right.
Like, what is that? What do you think that means about them? I think that means that they should shovel elephant dung for the rest of their lives. You know, well, then all of a sudden you find out that only short, squatty-fingered people are shoveling elephant dung. You're like, ah, that's what that means.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know exactly how that works. I've had my palm read by somebody, and I kind of took it more as a psychological profiling exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than as any sort of divination about the future. But then, I mean, I also had my coffee grounds read in that same evening, and that was fairly good.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't spectacularly accurate or anything, but it was the person who did it seemed like she was really on her A game.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never done, you know, tea leaves or coffee grounds or anything. Then again, I don't like tea or coffee, so.
Sort of shoot it in the foot right there.
Right, because aren't you supposed to drink the cup?
Yeah, you have to drink it.
Yeah. So.
Once we can figure out how to do Diet Coke bubbles and read those, then I guarantee you we'll be figuring out Lane's future every day.
Every hour.
Yes. What do the bubbles say now? Say you're drinking too much Diet Coke. That's what they're saying. Try a glass of water. That's what that bubble right there means. Yeah, the only really deeply accurate divination that I've encountered is cards.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know.
I mean, like, do you think the spirits come from beyond and tell you what cards to pick?
I don't think it quite goes that far. I do feel like there's some sort of guidance
mm-hmm.
With cards.
Well, you know, in most card readings you're supposed to pick from the deck. And I do sort of get feelings. Like, it's almost like the cards are jumping at me. They're like, hey, pick me. And I do, usually. I follow my gut a lot when I'm doing card readings.
That's probably the way to go with it. I don't think it's a rational exercise, so I wouldn't try to fit into a rational set of rules. So, I don't know. I think, you know, with card reading, one, you have a really broad set of images and tools, or images and metaphors and things like that that you're working with. So, you know, whether you're using tarot or I use playing cards to do mine. So, whatever you're using, you have a minimum of 52 images and tons of variants and combinations thereof.
Right. And honestly, you can interpret something, you know, 10 different ways, depending on how it's situated with the other symbols.
Well, yeah, I think that, like, I did a reading for you earlier this evening, and, you know, the main question you were asking about, the initial part of the reading was very clearly about that, and then the follow-up seemed to be about a completely different subject. I mean, and it was
That we had been discussing earlier.
Yeah, that we
had discussed. Sorry to be so vague, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't know that much about us.
No.
But yeah, so it was a completely different subject that we discussed earlier, but that we had not been trying to address with this card reading.
Right.
And in the end, we sort of looked at it and went, well, okay, dismissing this thing which seems to be the obvious reading of these cards, how can we relate it to the question that we actually asked? And kind of went back through it and went, oh, okay, there is a way that it fits.
Right. It just... See, that's the thing about cards, though, is that, you know, you can pretty much make it fit anyway, and that's, I think some people dismiss it because of that.
Right, but the thing for me about that is that it's not that you're making it fit. It's not that it's not like you're rationalizing with cards. Like, that's never how I come at it. I always come at it as you get three or four interpretations, and it's up to you to figure out which one was right.
Right.
You know, sometimes they are very clear cut, and it's obviously this is what they're talking about. You know, and if that's the case, then great. But sometimes it's much more of a, you've got several different roads to go down here, and it's up to you to figure out what the right road is. So that's kind of how I take it.
So how does divination factor into, like, signs and omens?
Well, I think all of it's about reading the world around you.
Okay.
Being in touch with, that's something that I think is a big part of being a witch, is that you have to be able to sense what's going on around you in ways that most people just don't, because they're not tuned in. They're not. And that's fine. We don't need everyone tuned in.
Right.
If everybody's tuned in, constantly looking for signs and omens, a lot of people are not going to get the mundane work of the world done. And not to say, like, mundane, like, monotonous, but, like, you know, you want somebody, you know, cutting your trees for your lumber not to be paying so much attention to the arrangement of birds in the sky, and probably paying a lot more attention to the fact that there are 50 people on the ground below him that he doesn't want to hit with a tree.
Yeah.
You know, or that's probably a terrible example.
That's okay. You're pretty much just saying that, you know, it takes both kinds.
Yeah, and there are people who don't want to be tuned in. Some people that would be a distraction and a nuisance. And then I totally understand that. So.
Well, what do you think about people who see signs everywhere and they, you know, everything is a sign?
I don't know, it's tough, because I don't like to dismiss that out of hand, because I think that there are a few people who are constantly tuned in, can't shut it off, and therefore are constantly receiving signs, and they're the prophets, really, is what it would come down to. They're your everyday prophets, but most prophets don't live comfortable lives. So when I see somebody who clearly, you know, when they pull up in a Beamer or, you know, they're wearing some Banana Republic clothes, they're like, yes, I'm constantly tuned into the world around me. I'm less inclined to go with that. You know, and I'm not saying, you know, that just those higher end things qualify, but, you know, if they're clearly living a comfortable life, then I don't think of them as being constantly tuned in, because... I don't think I think they would basically be one step away from the loony bin.
Yeah. That's
if they were really. Just because it's I mean, when you do tune in, it's pretty distracting and pretty intense. Mm-hmm. So.
Because it's almost like meditation.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. You know, if you're reading cards, it's this whole other mental state that you're in. Yeah. That I'm in, anyway.
Well, yeah, and, you know, you can't, like, read cards, you know, driving down the street. You want to sit down, you know, maybe light a candle, you know, really think and relax and put yourself in that different mental state. Anywho, moving on.
So, what do you think? Is it better to know the future, then, or is it better to let it surprise you? Would you rather be prepared for the worst or surprised by the best?
Why can't it be both? I'll just pay attention to the death omens. No, I think that, you know, there's a valid point to both, and that you should take the warnings that are being given, but like I said, you don't let it totally rule your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that you're onto something there. Like, there's, if it's something of consequence, if it's something worth noting, it always seems like it sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's that little voice going, hey, pay attention.
Right.
So, when you hear that voice, pay attention. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend who used to pendulum douse for answers for things like which groceries to buy. And, yeah, it's one of those things where I'm like, man, I don't know that my little voice quite gets that involved in my life.
Right.
Like, Cheesy Mac or Kraft Dinner? Cheesy Mac, Kraft Dinner, you know? So, anywho. Well, all right, what about, to conclude here,
mm-hmm.
What type of divination or types of divination are you learning now, or would you be interested in learning in the future?
I just want to do more card reading. Both tarot and playing. I think that my energies are best spent.
Mm. Do you need a new deck, though, don't you?
I do. The one I have is not very... It's a Celtic deck, and I have...
No Celtic energy.
No, not at all. It just... Like, I respect the culture, but it doesn't speak to me in any way, shape, or form.
I'll just see if I could find, like, a rabbit tarot.
Yes. I'd love that.
You'd love that. I'll just give that to you. I have a big thing about, like, you can't read cards from cards you buy for yourself.
Really?
Usually.
Well, there's a superstition for you.
Yeah. I've
never heard that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of things about magical tools that I'm very funny about.
Yeah, well, usually I don't let people touch them unless I'm very close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, though, because, like, when I had an altar set up in my house, and I mean, like, my childhood house,
mm-hmm.
you know, with my mom and my brothers running around.
Right.
They would rarely touch it. You know, it was, and I didn't have to do anything. It was just sort of a...
It was sanctified, justified, sanctified, justified.
Am I supposed to get that? Because I don't.
This is some good gospel truth for you.
Oh, okay.
That's all it is.
I thought it was a movie or something.
No, I'd just be preaching it for you. So back to your pagan altars after that little moment.
Yeah. But it seemed like there was like a fence around it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But my dog's always being really interested in it.
Mm-hmm. It's the animals.
Yep.
They're tipped off. They know something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
My cats, again, could care less.
Right.
I mean, if we set up any sort of ritual space, like, it's a 50-50 shot that they'll try to get in.
Mm-hmm.
They usually only try to get in if we close the door and lock them out.
Right.
That's the only thing they care about.
And then you see paws coming under.
Yeah. like they somehow will magically figure out how to open the door from the other side. Yes. Cats are geniuses. But yeah, with magical tools, I don't know, like, tarot cards, and then to a lesser extent, playing cards. If I know I'm going to be using a deck of playing cards for actually reading something, I don't like to have bought them. I like to have them have been given to me as a gift or have coincidentally come to me in some way.
Hmm.
Like a thrift store deck, I would be more inclined to be okay with because it's that secondhand nature.
Yeah.
So I might be able to make that work, but I wouldn't do it. You know, a fresh pack of cards that I buy in, you know, Walmart, not I'm not likely to reboot those.
Right.
I'm likely to play cards.
What if you, cleansed them or did some sort of ritual of some sort? Would you then use them?
No, actually, I probably would be less inclined to use them then because I would feel like I was trying to cheat. I'd be more inclined to use them if they'd been used to play games for a while.
Oh, okay.
Like if they had been
sort of... once they became used?
Right, once they had been broken in one way and then, the situation called for it. Somebody said, hey, can you do a reading, and those are the only cards I have available, then, yeah, I'd be like, oh, okay, they've been tapped. They're ready to go.
Gotcha.
And I'm good with that, but...
So do you want to focus more on cards, or do you want to try anything else, donation-wise?
I definitely would like to learn dowsing with rods and for water, primarily, but pendulum dowsing kind of goes with that because there's a map dowsing system where you can kind of find water on the map or find where you need to go do the physical rods dowsing on the map. And I would love to learn that. But, I mean, that's about it. I'm not into runes.
No.
Never have been.
Never been into runes.
And nothing against them. Some people do great with them, but...
Right, they just don't speak to me at all.
Weirdly, I have no interest in cowrie shells, despite the fact that
I think cowrie shells are pretty cool.
I know a lot of people love them, but it's just not interesting.
I just think of them as almost like an amulet or something. They're not like any sort of divination tool to me.
There's a whole system.
Is there?
Yeah, that comes from African traditions.
Oh yeah, I figured.
Where they'll read using the different cowrie shells.
Sort of like throwing dice.
It's a little bit like that. I think it's a little more like reading bones.
Oh.
I would be more inclined to read bones than I would be to read cowrie shells, but not really inclined to do either. Primarily inclined to learn the water witching and things like that. And I'd like to expand my knowledge of cards. I think at some point, I feel like I will probably want to learn tarot really, really thoroughly. But right now, I really like kind of being the guy who can read playing cards.
I think it's, in my opinion, it's been way more effective than tarot ever has been.
Yeah, well, that sort of concludes our take on signs and omens, and we thank you for listening to us rant and rave and discuss these things. And we're just going to take a quick little break, then we'll be back to close up this episode.
Yep.
All right. Talk to you in a minute.
Hi, this is Meadow Moon, and you can find me at A Pagan in the Threshold, where I will be discussing mostly pagan-related topics. I'm a work-from-home homeschooling mom of two located in South Carolina. In addition to that, I'm a case manager for a local paranormal group, and I have a bachelor's degree in alternative medicine. So I think it's pretty safe to say that we'll have plenty to talk about. You can find me at meadowmoon.com and on iTunes. So I invite you to join me as I hit rewind on my pagan beliefs and start back at square one.
Hello, this is Firelight, creator of Inciting a Riot, the podcast. Come join the riot as I tackle tough issues in paganism, news, and living a modern, magical, middle-class life. Find the show on iTunes or become a rioter by following the blog at fire-lyte.blogspot.com. Inciting a Riot, lighting a fire under comfortable thinking.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening.
That's it for our show today.
We hope you enjoyed it. And we'd like to remind you that any comments or questions can be directed to us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
Or you can leave comments on the blog at newworldwitchery.wordpress.com. Or we would really like some more
glowing 5-star reviews on iTunes.
Yes, definitely.
Not to pander for cheap ego boosts, but we'll take them where we can get them.
Once again, thank you to those who have left before, but if you have anything else to say, let us know.
Yeah.
Also, congratulations to Annika, our contest winner.
Yay, Annika! Yay! Woo! She submitted some weather lore to our weather lore contest, and her lore, as well as others, will be featured in an upcoming episode of New World Witchery.
Mm-hmm.
And she is the proud recipient, or soon-to-be recipient, of a copy of Catherine Ironwood's Hoodoo Urban Root Magic. So, congratulations to her again.
And we have another little announcement, I guess.
Yeah, speaking of upcoming episodes of New World Witchery.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, we have a very special episode of New World Witchery.
Come on, do it, do it. You know,
no.
You do it. Oh, she was going to do the freak out, the Jesse Spano freak out from Saved by the Bell. But no, she's not.
No, I was not going to. I just made reference to it earlier.
But you're so excited and so scared. Okay.
Anyway.
Now that we got the geek flag flying.
Right.
Yeah.
The 90s geek flag.
Yes. So we will have a regularly scheduled episode in 2 weeks featuring an interview with someone from the magical community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still working on finalizing the interview with the guest, but I think it's going to be a very good guest. I think everybody will be really interested in that show.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that...
Yeah, it's a different type of episode. It won't follow our regular format, but it'll be more of a practical episode, and we're really excited about it, so...
Mm-hmm. It'll be a specific topic that I think any practicing witch will enjoy.
Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, so keep your browsers pointed towards us.
So thanks for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening.